honoured friends and my hosts who have welcomed us here this morning, I must begin by thanking you for the kindness and warmth that we have been shown here, as indeed I've experienced in other Sikh contexts. It is a real delight to have this opportunity to spend some time with you, to exchange some reflections with you, and by God's grace, to learn from you also. There are three issues which I should like to mention at the beginning of my reflections this morning. Three issues which, to me, reinforce the need, the profitability of a conversation between our communities. And at the heart of all of them, I believe, lies this conviction. To be a religious community, to be a community of faith, is not simply to be a group of people who have certain opinions or even certain convictions. It is to be a group of people who model for the world around what a community truly is. We who are people of faith are committed to the idea that God's presence and purpose in the world are shown not in words or ideas, but in the way in which we treat one another, the way in which we give reverence and respect to one another. And our world is still a world where human life can seem cheap in the eyes of many. Returning, as I have, from Africa within the last week, I have very much on my heart the terrible history of civil war in the last couple of decades throughout the continent of Africa, and the immense loss of life that has meant. Perhaps 5 or 6 million in Congo alone within the last 20 years. We still live in a world where human life is cheap in the eyes of far too many. Communities of faith exist by God's providence so that we may see the preciousness of human life. And that underpins, I believe, all the reflections that we share in interfaith dialogue. Interfaith dialogue would be just an empty exchange of interesting ideas if it did not begin from and end in a commitment to that reverence for the preciousness of every single person in the world. And that takes me to the first of the points I want to make. And I've already really been forestalled in making it by the wonderful introduction that we heard. For those of us who do not belong to the Sikh community, the story of the ninth Guru, Guru Tegh Bahadur, is indeed a matter of enormous inspiration. Here is somebody who is a martyr not for his private conviction, not even for the conviction of his community, but a martyr for the dignity and preciousness of the other, the stranger. And that is a truly extraordinary thing, so rare within the whole world of religions, that if that were the only contribution of Sikhism to the religious map of the world, it would be precious in itself. And it is a reminder that in a world of plural convictions and diverse communities, one of the most important things to which God calls us is our willingness to take risks, not just for our own dignity and conviction, but for the dignity and the conviction of the other, the neighbour, the stranger. So that part of what we want to say about true community to the world is that God's purpose never lies simply in self-defence, but in the defence of the human family as a whole. To recognise dignity and liberty in one another, to be ready to risk life for the other, for the stranger. That tells us the most human thing we can do is to be willing to approach the stranger as a friend. And that wonderful story of the martyrdom of the ninth Guru, that I think should stand as an inspiration and a profound challenge to all of us who tend, perhaps under pressure, to step back and say, I'm going to defend myself before I defend anyone else. A little while ago, the religious communities of this country worked together on a protocol in which we promised that when any one community or its buildings or its people were attacked, others would be there to stand with them and to defend them. That principle has, I think, worked itself out in many particular contexts across the country. I believe it is fundamental to a religious dialogue that is authentic and transforming. So my first point is simply to acknowledge that truly remarkable and, I believe, unique gift which Sikhs have given to the religious world. When our own Christian St. Paul writes in his letter to the Romans that God in Jesus has given up a life for the enemy, that is some echo of what we see in the life and the death of the ninth guru, and I believe that that is part of what God says to us most deeply, that his will is not that we should be safe, but that all his children, friends and enemies, should be safe. And that our commitment in dialogue must be to serve the security and the well-being of the other. Without compromising our convictions, without looking for some kind of formula that we can all sign together. No, simply the bare willingness to be there for the other and to take risks for the other. As we Christians believe, God himself has taken a risk in his love for us. The second obvious point here has to do with the historic Sikh commitment to equality. Reading the Guru Granth Sahib, on, it seems, almost every other page, that vision of equality is set forth. And not only a vision of equality, but a vision of equality that rests on the belief that everyone has access to the grace and love of God. God does not sit back and wait for us to fulfill a lot of complicated conditions. God's grace, God's help, God's mercy and love are offered to us even before we have begun on the journey. And that underpins some of the comments in the Guru Granth Sahib about ritualism, about the belief that by our external acts alone, we can somehow justify ourselves in the sight of God. And again, this echoes so closely some of the fundamental beliefs and convictions of our own Christian faith. That emphasis on internal transformation, that emphasis on a belief in a God who is always on the way to meet us, even before we have started on our journey to meet him. Crystallized for us who are Christians in the story of the prodigal son, when he begins to return to his father, is overtaken by the father who has already set out to find him. And my own reading of passages of the Guru Granth Sahib makes me believe that that vision of the God who sets out towards us even before we have reached him is fundamental to the conviction expressed in that book. Equality among human beings is not as obvious as some modern people think it is. There are a great many people who believe that a conviction about human equality is so self-evident that we need no religious underpinning for it. And yet the history of the last 100 years does suggest that when religious conviction disappears, human equality and human dignity often go with it. Or to put it epigrammatically, if you stop believing in God, then sooner or later you'll stop believing in man as well. So, in the witness that we seek to bear together to our society, we do, I believe, want to underline, as Sikhs, as Christians, whatever community we belong to, that sense that the equality and dignity of human beings rests not on some rational, self-evident idea, but on a belief in God's own passionate commitment to every creature God has made. And that without that sense of God's commitment to us, our belief in human equality is going to be a very fragile thing indeed. The Sikh tradition has again and again resisted the temptations that so many other faiths have fallen prey to, of hierarchy, the abuse of power. It has remained deeply faithful to that belief that all are equally welcome in that free grace, that free love, that pours out without cause, without beginning, and without end from our Creator, who loves us and holds us precious. And to speak of welcome is to take me to the third of my points. You will not need me to remind you that hospitality is fundamental in Sikh practice, and those of us from other communities have benefited in soul and body from that hospitality many times. Hospitality, human hospitality, the open table, the open door, that is one of the most effective signs in our world of that causeless, beginningless, endless love of God. God is, quite simply, there for us. His door is open. I have set before you, says the Lord in our Christian scriptures, a door, an open door, which no one will be able to shut. And that belief that the love of God is an open door that no human being is able to shut, that we seek to express, you seek to express, in the practices of hospitality. A service, once again, not just for a small community of like-minded people, but simply a service, a recognition of dignity, and a recognition of the fact that one of the things which keeps us united as human beings and makes us equal as human beings is hunger, the need to be fed physically, and the need to be fed spiritually and emotionally, with human love and with the love of God. So what is done by Sikh communities in that daily practice of hospitality speaks not just of vague goodwill, but of a real belief in who God is and how God is, expressed directly in material terms. And for the Christian, it's worth remembering that Jesus Christ, in his earthly life, did not only proclaim the good news by what he said, or even by the miracles he performed, but by his willingness to welcome around the same table those that the rest of the world would prefer to forget about. Jesus himself uses hospitality to speak of God, of who God is, and of how God is. Once again, we're in a world where hospitality seems very difficult to many people. Once a very hospitable society, we in Britain have sadly become less hospitable in some ways in recent years. More nervous, more suspicious about the foreigner, about the refugee. And yet there is obstinately within our British history and culture some sense of that religious heritage that pushes us back towards a vision of welcome, of justice and hospitality to all. And once again, our religious communities can together witness to such a vision. The willingness then to take risks for the stranger, passionate commitment to human equality, fleshing that out in terms of welcome, hospitality, the respect, the equal respect due to all. That is a great challenge, but a great vision, a life-giving, an exciting, an energizing vision. We who are Christians, those of you who are Sikhs, those of you who represent other religious families, we can surely together see that that kind of witness is what a suspicious, violent, anxious, hungry world needs. And we need one another to make that witness effective. We need to be able to say that this or that conviction is not just the eccentricity of Sikhs or of Christians. It is something to do with the effect of what I sometimes think of as the sheer pressure of the love of God on the human world, a pressure that we cannot resist. It pushes all of us at some level towards generosity, towards mutual acceptance and reconciliation. That is the very energy of the universe itself. That is what we seek to witness to in our different ways, with our very different convictions and philosophies and constructions of how the world is. But together, as communities of faith, we have something to say to the world about what human community is. I trust and pray that in our dialogue we shall learn how to do that together more and more effectively, and more joyfully and gratefully, as we are pressed, pressured by that vision of God's reckless love for all, friend and stranger, which has so shaped our traditions.